James, hey. You there?
Yeah, what happened?
I don't know. I thought it was ready, and I'll tell you on air.
Sure.
Okay, yeah, we'll do that. All right, go ahead and hit the record, Donna. Yeah, we're not going to stream. We don't have enough bandwidth. All right, welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, another independence declaring kind of individual, Mr. James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. All right, but yeah, we had a problem. I thought, you know, I'm ready. I figured you were late and you were doing something else. What it was is that it didn't close out the meeting from my previous radio show that I was doing, a progressive radio station here in Phoenix that saw us on, that I've been on before, because the general manager of the station used to be my board op back in 04, you know, when he was going to college, you know, here in Phoenix. But he's a progressive. I mean, I had a little bit of impact, you know, but I couldn't free him, you know, but a little bit more. So he's a progressive. He has a progressive station there. And a couple of the hosts have had me on a regular basis to explain it to them. Well, what brought me to mind was one of your shows that we did on Black Market Friday.info. And they were, oh, we want to talk to Ernie and see what he has to say about COVID, what he has to say about the election, what he has to say about. So I get them all caught up, and they're just like, Corbett fans, we love us some Corbett. So when they were pushing back on the COVID thing, and I go, well, obviously you haven't been to CorbettReport.com every chance I get, okay? So I told you I was going to do it. Anyway, so they go to CorbettReport.com/Gates, right? That's where I sent them. And I said, you know, you go do that. Now, one of the guys has been up on it. You know, now he's a black gentleman that, you know, the progressive, but he's got it going on. He knows, you know, there's something up. The other guy is a Caucasian guy from Prescott that comes down to do the show, but he's Mr. Progressive. Oh, he's all, man, it's all about the progress. Well, I need some facts and truth. So it gets to where it got to the point that you have one of the hosts arguing with the other one on the credibility of James Corbett. So I just sit back and go, yeah, you guys, you figure it out. Let me know. So that's, you know, I guess the link was still like,
you know what that speaks to? This is a time of awakening. I mean, there's a lot of people who have been trapped in their mental boxes. I'm this label. I'm this team. There's a lot of people who are starting to see maybe I've got things wrong. And, and it's hopeful. There's a lot of people that are starting to step outside the bounds. And I just had a conversation with someone who's completely new to my work, has only been aware of me for a few months, but she has gone into the archives and gotten all Corbetted up, and is now, she interviewed me, and she's starting to spread the word about this info. So it is happening. And is it happening fast enough? I don't know. But before I forget, we should note for Black Market Friday, we should pass it along to the audience in case they didn't know. Yeah, if you happen to go to agorist.market on Black Market Friday, you might have gotten an error message because the servers were down because too many people were trying to go to agorist.market or blackmarketfriday.info on that day, and it actually brought down the servers. But the IPFS backup was still fine and working okay. So that speaks to A, this is popular, and B, the D-Web alternatives are going to be incredibly important going up from here.
You know, that was good that it was Mike Swatek that actually did that, because he really saw the value of IPFS, and he has been instrumental in helping platform a lot of people. And whenever, you know, him and Thomas Friedman, you know, I go, look, man, I need this one, boom. You know, but then I don't even know how the heck they do it so fast. I guess there's some copy YouTube thing script that they wrote, and they just push a button, boom, it comes over. And I go, wow, there needs to be a video on just how to do that and get your hashes and so on. That's amazing. So we did RP4409. You remember 4409 from back in the day? And I'm going here out of Phoenix, and I'm going, they're going to definitely take some of his stuff. Even though he hadn't been posting, you know, in years, there a lot of that stuff, that's just classic stuff. They're going to get rid of that, you know, any day. So I go, we need to get that. That afternoon, it was done. And I'm going, wow, this IPFS thing is kicking butt. And that was one thing they were talking to me on this progressive radio program about censorship. And I said, you know, that's where we got in on you. And I said, You know, James Corbett, he understood this as a technique and inevitable thing that was going to happen from the beginning. And we were very enthusiastic about having him. And all he had to do is put a site map up that we, within 18 hours, we had it up. You know, I mean, you know, this is, so they went and they tried it. Boom, boom, it goes up. So I'm going, it's working fast, man.
Yeah, this is it. And it's happening. I mean, there's no, we don't have to talk about this in some speculative way anymore. Everyone who is in this space and who looks at this information now knows about the censorship and knows the importance of having alternatives. So, yeah.
It's, yeah, one of the things that they asked me about, I mean, yeah, they want, you know, all the hot issues, you know, crypto and all kinds of stuff. And my friend Bob Anderson was showing me, he goes, hey, look, there's you can get crypto on your PayPal account. Have you heard about this?
I have. I also have heard that it's not exactly like you don't own the keys and you're not going to be able to trade in and out of crypto. But anyway,
yeah. Yeah, I'm not. Is it just a speculative thing on PayPal and you got to pay taxes on what you made on the what? You know, I'm what was this even about? I remember Libra.
I don't know. I haven't even seen that feature or functionality on PayPal. Probably not rolling out in Japan. I don't know. I don't care. It's obviously not something, but it has been part of the reason for the spike in price recently. There's a lot of more people that are interested once again.
Yeah, people are not. I had Doug Scribner on, and we were talking about FlyAir. It was like it started Air Ethereum. You know, it was kind of an app that you could Uber order, you know, jet airplanes, and you know, you get cheap prices. They just got to reposition a plane to go private charter to pick up the rich guy of whatever, and might as well pay for gas with, you know, this group of something, right? So they have an app that's doing that, and before it was you paid and so on with crypto, but then they found that, you know, there's a big market for this even outside of crypto, and you know, they working on that. So we had one of the developers and investors and everything on, and then Doug and I got to yak it and so on. Well, he's kind of a Bitcoin maximalist, and you know, it's time to get Tone Vase back on. He was just on and they were yakking about me and stuff, you know. So I'm just Skype, yeah, bring it on, Tone, give me all this maximalist stuff. Well, still they're making the argument store of value, it's not going to be a currency, and it's going to, you know, evolve into, I can see it coming, GoldmanSucks.gov coin. I mean, this is, you know, what's going to be the standard, and they all want it to be that. But if I can't buy bubblegum money, I mean, if I can't buy, you know, small and it be a fast, cheap transaction, I'm not interested. You know, I mean, that is the value that I want to store in, you know? So I was kind of surprised that Bitcoin Cash took so long for it to go back up and break 300, which it did, you know, and I'm sure it'll still go up. But there's some other small ones that I got for specific reasons that are doing really well. And it's privacy issues.
Hold on. Which Bitcoin Cash? Because you've heard about the latest.
Yeah, I know. Right? But they, you know, I don't know. Can I call it classic Bitcoin Cash?
I think it's ABC versus PEG now or whatever.
Whatever.
It's forking and forking. Well,
the original one, not the one where they're trying to pay the miners and all that other stuff. I don't think that went over well. You know, I don't know how's that. And I don't really care because a lot of the stuff that I make in crypto, it keeps going over a certain amount. I just convert it to silver, especially when silver's down. Because I think, you know, silver is the better bet. I mean, I'm like I was telling these guys, I'm going, yeah, crypto is all about being people's money. It's about the, you know, legal tender laws being I can buy and sell, use whatever the hell I want. Well, of course, PayPal wants to get into it because you can convert it back and forth, but you don't get the keys. They have it. They can easily seize it. They can do, I'm going, who the hell wants to do that, you know? Well, Libra with Facebook, they got that still haunting out on the horizon. There's some kind of, you know, what have you been hearing? You know, what's the digital, you got to use it money coming?
Okay, this is exceptionally important. And if people haven't seen it yet, I just had a conversation with John Titus of Best Evidence about this, talking about central bank digital currencies. That is the buzzword. It's what all the bankers are talking about right now. It's what they're all hyping. And we talked about that in that conversation. Please go listen to it if you haven't yet. And from there, you'll find a link to the IMF's cross-border virtual payment, a live stream that they had last month, which was a conversation between the head of the IMF, Kristalina Georgieva, and the head of the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements, Augustin Karstens, and the head of the Fed, Jerome Powell, and I think it was a Malaysian banker and a Saudi Arabian banker. Anyway, they're talking about CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, and it is fascinating because, as we talk about, as I talked about with John Titus, Augustin Karstens starts just going apoplectic about how awesome this is going to be. Now, finally, we, the bankers, will be able to see and control every transaction. Every time someone spends $100, we'll be able to see where it's going and all of this. And then Jerome Powell comes on a little bit later to say, well, we have to think about privacy issues and security and things like this, and tries to tamp down the enthusiasm. But it's clear where this is going, and this is what they're talking about. I will be having a podcast up hopefully in 36 hours or so that about this, and about Kristalina Georgieva calling for a new Bretton Woods moment, and what that means, and where we're heading from here. Because as important as everything else that's happening right now, including the vaccines, which, oh, by the way, in case you haven't heard, Britain just gave their emergency use authorization to Pfizer for their mRNA vaccine, could start rolling out within days. But beyond all of that craziness, I think the changeover in monetary paradigm that they have slated in for the next 5 to 10 years is going to be monumentally important and potentially shape the future of the world.
Okay. In what way? How are they going to implement? They're going to require, it's going to transition to, there's some incentive, benefit, you get your, you know, universal basic in this form. How's it going to be popularized?
It certainly is not set in stone yet. And this is what all of the white papers from all of the different central banks that are looking into it stress right now. There are many different ways to implement this, and we have to judge carefully privacy versus ability to control transactions and blah, 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 and all the feel-good stuff. So it will probably look different in each country that implements it. But actually, that's part of the problem. But that problem is just an invitation for a solution, which is, how are they going to work with cross-border settlement of virtual national central bank digital currencies? Because, of course, in this current system, they have reserves of currencies like the dollar, for example, that they use for international settlements. But when you're working with these central bank digital currencies that all play differently and work differently, and what are you going to settle in? That's probably going to be decided by some sort of supranational agency.
They were already talking about this years ago, the special drawing rights, you know, the SDRs
exactly.
Or
the
whatever.
IMF is going to be there saying, hey, guys, we can do it. I'm sure the BIS might say, oh, we can set up a special board to do it. I don't know exactly what form it's going to take, but some sort of international
body
is going to.
Let me ask you this. What is the interface between all these traditional guys of the money of we're going to rule you and the IMF and the World Bank and, you know, the BIS and all that kind of stuff. And all of a sudden here comes the World Economic Forum and the Great Reset and the COVID of something. I mean, you know, where's the overlap between the World Economic Forum and these traditional we rule you world banking people?
Well, look, I mean, there is a lot of overlaps, and we could draw the Venn diagram in a lot of ways, one of which would be to say, well, World Economic Forum Executive Director Klaus Schwab also happens to be a former steering committee member of the Bilderberg Group. So, I mean, there's an obvious kind of connection. I mean, they all run in the same circles, and they're all what point is there in separating this out into this organization versus this organization?
This Klaus guy, I would have paid to have him be the spokesperson. I mean, that was like Bond villain time, man. That is awesome. He is the who would play him? He'd have to play himself.
Yeah, absolutely. You could not hire a better actor to portray Dr. Evil than Klaus Schwab. I mean, it's crazy.
And they're proud of it too, man. You know, the one thing I brought up your site here. I wanted to talk about this because I watched it, and you know, of course, you know, I'm always getting distracted and that, and it's in the background and everything. But it was the JFK, you know, the silver certificate thing. Let me skip to the end on that because I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it. But the mythos has been that one of the reasons he was killed is because he was, you know, one, wanting 1,000 pieces of the CIA. That's a good enough reason. And but the Federal Reserve, he was going after them, and he was going to go to silver certificate. He was taking the Federal Reserve out of the system, whatever. And you were saying that's a myth. I mean, am I getting you right?
Yes. I mean, there's a lot of nuance here, so people can watch the full episode for it. But yeah, basically, the myth is that JFK was going to end the Federal Reserve, and this thing called Executive Order 11110 proves it. And that authorized the Treasury to print however many billions of dollars of silver certificates. And then, of course, they killed him, and then they put in LBJ, and he stopped it. And that's what this is all about. It's not just wrong. It's 180 degrees exactly opposite to reality. When you actually examine JFK's own words, his own writing, he campaigned for years, actually, and finally got it in 1963, the exact opposite. He campaigned for the Federal Reserve to have more power to issue Federal Reserve notes in $1 and $2 and $5 denominations, in small denominations, the power that it did not have before. He actively campaigned for that. He actively campaigned for the demonetization of silver. He was not going to end the Fed. Executive Order 11110 did not authorize the Treasury to print silver. It didn't have any, print so many billions of dollars of silver certificates. That was a regular issuance that occurred at regular intervals that had occurred many times in the past. It did occur under JFK, that's true, but he also authorized his Treasury Secretary to end that practice, which is exactly what his Treasury Secretary did in 64. Of course, it was after he died, but he gave the power to the Treasury Secretary to do that. He instructed him to do that. Everything about it is wrong. And I find it fascinating that a lot of people can get it when they see it laid out, and I go through all the documents and his own words and all of the things and put the dots together. But there are still people who, for some reason, it is so much a core part of their identity that, of course, JFK was going to end the Fed, that they will literally look at the exact same data and still try to come to the exact opposite conclusion. No. You see, he was giving the Fed the power to print Federal Reserve notes in smaller denominations because he was going to show people that the Federal Reserve notes were less valuable than the silver certificates. That was this 5D chess maneuver and all of the kind of Trump pretzel knots that people have learned to tie themselves in to justify absolutely anything that takes place. It's fascinating and slightly sickening to watch. And then I have other people saying, oh, you're an enemy to humanity, James, for going against JFK was against the deep state. Look, I understand JFK was assassinated as a result of a conspiracy for a number of reasons. Obviously, pulling out of Vietnam, he was going to do that. He was against the military-industrial complex. He ended the Bay of Pigs and didn't support them with the military. They clearly did not like him for that. He was going against Israel and their attempts to create the nuke and all of that. He was against the deep state. He was not going to end the Fed. Just that's a myth. And I don't understand why I have to be on some team where we believe everything about JFK was good and holy. No, he wasn't a perfect angel. He had good things about him against the deep state. That was the reason he was assassinated. Ending the Fed was not one of them.
You know, one of the things it seems, because one, the president kind of... Did they nominate? Is it approved by the... How is the Fed chairman selected? They're kind of independent, but the president goes, yeah, this guy and not that guy. What's the nominating confirmation process of that?
The president appoints the chair of the board, but he appoints it, generally speaking, from a list that is handed to him. Of course. Yeah. Here's a list of good candidates, Mr. President. We think you should pick this one, but you can take a look at this list and... he'll generally pick whichever one he's told to pick. That's the way it works. But theoretically, technically, yes, the president has the ability to appoint anyone he wants to chair the Board of Governors. Having said that, the Board of Governors is important, but the chair is, I mean, it's not like the chair runs the entire Federal Reserve system. And anyway, the Board of Governors is also mandated to include some percentage of bankers, essentially, the people in the banking system. Of course, bankers are going to sit on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System that is stewarding over the money supply of the U.S. That's what this is about. It's the cartelization. And beyond that, we also have to keep in mind that this is a dual system where, yeah, you have the Board of Governors that sets their federal funds rate and targets federal funds rate, etc. But you also have the privately owned, privately run Federal Reserve regional banks. It's a dual system like that. And so, and they don't even, they argue in court. Yes, the Federal Reserve regional banks are private banks, and you cannot see certain records because they are private entities. So it's such a mess. But anyway, yeah, theoretically, the president gets to appoint the chair of the board.
Well, you know, it seems
totally above board government agency, guys.
Yeah. Well, it seems like they like having that power to appoint the head of the Federal Reserve and then get them to do something. I mean, what do they get them to do? I seen Trump yelling, and you said the word Trump first. We're going to talk about Trump. It's all you, man. You did it. But the, you know, having Trump being able to appoint someone doesn't necessarily mean that he gets them to do what he wants, but he appoints these guys that are on their list. It seems like he had a lot of opportunities, and I think the biggest regret he's going to have is that he had real power and real opportunities, but he was negotiating with them or something. He was trying to play the inside game or something like, or he is the inside. I mean, you know, as we go later on, we're going to go, you know, I don't think it worked out the way you thought it was. Oh, I got to bring this up while I'm thinking about it. Patrick Byrne, been going, when Patrick Byrne comes back, everybody's going to know what's up. Because I thought that he was going to wait till after, you know, the end of, you know, all this crap, he'd come back and go, well, are we ready for some crypto solutions? And we're going in the next new of everybody can bite me, and me and Elon are going to have our own world or something, whatever. And but come to find out, he's been back for several months, and he took on the board of directors of some other, you know, I wasn't paying attention. I just looked at his deep capture site, and he didn't have anything until he had this election fraud evaluation. So I'm going, okay, let's get him back on. You know, we'll yak about it. But I'm really looking for next, what's after this. And one of the things that he intimated in one of the interviews is he said that there was to be a button push of election fraud Dominion for Hillary, and they didn't push the button. He knew the guy that was in charge of that. He goes, yeah, I'm retired and I'm not going to push it, or we didn't do it, and whatever, and she lost, you know. So Trump wasn't supposed to win this. So I'm going, really? That's going to be my first question. All right, tell me all about that. Well, he didn't want to reveal who, and I don't really care who, but I want to know all the details. So now that when they hit engage, you know, and Biden wins from his basement and so on, and that's still going on. Here in Maricopa County was one of five counties around the country that they had to control to get the states and all that, and Arizona was part of it. Well, I've been screaming about Maricopa County since forever. Ran for Secretary of State twice, kind of recorder, and a bunch of other races and so on. But I knew what they were going to do and how, and that was part of a lot of what we talked about today on the Progressive Radio Show. But I don't really see it getting fixed. And I don't see that there's some other, you know, juggling, mental gymnastics are going to go through, and, you know, the SCOTUS is going to send it to Congress and they're going to vote one state and whatever the hell. But I'm going, you know, I think he'd be more effective outside if he actually, you know, went all Trump outside of the office, because the legitimacy of government is gone. Who the hell wants to be in charge of when it goes crashing down and you're not, it was great under my name. Hell, you're better off outside.
Yes, I agree. Yeah, lots of things to say there. First of all, you and I know that the selection process is a total circus and is rigged top to bottom. So that shouldn't be a surprise to you or me, but maybe, hopefully, some larger percentage of the audience or the general public now know about that. But more fundamentally, you and I know that selection, the entire idea of elections and democracy, is fundamentally immoral and evil. And that's why we should not be participating in it. We should not be empowering the government to use violence against peaceful people, which is what government is and what it does. So we do not want to participate in that system, even if it was a free and fair election and they counted every vote and 50% plus one voted for Biden to rule over everyone. Oh, yay. Or even if it was Trump to rule over everyone. Oh, yay. No, it's evil. It's an evil system. So we will not participate in that. Having said that, from the normie perspective, I noted a comment on, I think it was Zero Hedge earlier today, which was interesting to get into that normie perspective. Someone saying, finally saying, you know, I've covered for Trump for years, but no, we the people, we put him in office. We hired him to drain the swamp and to fight against the deep state. And all he has done is appointed person after person who has gone against his agenda and completely failed to live up to those promises that he made. You know, we admit it, all you Trump supporters out there, admit that this is not what you hired this person to do, if you think of it in those terms. And look, whatever else comes of this, whatever else comes of Trump's legacy, I don't think people should ever forgive or forget Operation Warp Speed, which, remember, when it was put to him in the press conference where they were talking about Operation Warp Speed, we're going to warp speed these experimental gene-altering vaccines directly into your arms. Don't worry. The military has been put in charge of this operation. And they asked him, who is in charge of this operation? And he sort of went, oh, well, you know, well, it's me. It's me. I'm in charge of this. I could give you names, but no, it's me. I'm in charge. Yes, Trump is in charge. This is Trump's Operation Warp Speed plan to put these vaccines in your arms. Don't ever, ever, ever forget that. And don't let him get off the hook for that.
You know, he did try and get off the hook by, you know, I'm not going to mandate it. But he took the gun.
Doesn't
he pointed
matter.
It at the
Does
American people and he handed it to Biden. I'm going, yay. You know, we had Dr. Mikovits on today, and we were over at my son's, and my 11-year-old granddaughter was sitting there on the couch and, you know, listening to the program. And at the end, I go, Dr. Judy, you know, I have my 11-year-old granddaughter's listening to you. What would you say to her? You know, what do you want her to know about all this stuff going on? Because my son had pulled four of his kids out of school. They're homeschooling. They're a lot happier. They're taking care of business. You know, they're learning. They're great kids. They spend that, you know, 3 hours a day, you know, sitting there at their tables and desks and whiteboards and doing all their work. And they got curriculum that they have and all that kind of stuff. So they're getting the education, but it's only 3 hours. So then they get to do other stuff and creative stuff, or started 3D printing parts for the bus that my grandson will pay him $5 a piece. And thanks for the file, Bob. So, you know, what happened was, goes to her and she said, don't ever let anyone inject you with a vaccine. Bottom line. You know, blah, 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 all the other stuff. Do not ever let them inject you. So I'm like, thank you. Yep. Well, you got that, you know. And I'm wondering if the next generation is going to take that to heart, or are they primarily and in the majority going to be like Washington, D.C., where they pass city legislation for 11-year-olds to give informed consent, and then the insurance company, the school, the medical community lie to the parents, and they get inoculated without their, much less their permission, not even their knowledge. So what are you going to do? Who do you sue? Your kid starts getting sick. What do you do?
Yeah, you can't sue the vaccine manufacturers, that's for sure, because anyway, liability is baked into the cake with all of these experimental vaccines. I cannot stress this enough for people who are not paying attention. Not only is this experimental mRNA vaccine technology that has never before been approved for human use and has been warp-speeded into people's arms in a matter of months, but yes, of course, absolute liability, indemnity for all of these corporations that are coming up with these concoctions. I just, how any rational human being will look at that and say, yep, make me a guinea pig. Experiment on me. I'm totally happy with that. Admitting that you are part of an experiment, because the phase 3 trial of this Pfizer vaccine, which was just approved for use in Britain, is still ongoing. Read the trial protocol. It will be 24 months of surveillance after the vaccines before they even come to the end of their phase 3 trial. This emergency use authorization is essentially saying, yep, it's fine. The trial's ongoing, but we're going to let people take it anyway.
This is the experiment on our children. That's what's going on. You know, and it's like, yeah, we're not like, we learned something. Well, some people didn't die. One thing about, you look at America from Japan, and of course, and even Canada. And does it seem that Europe is in more opposition to the lockdowns than America?
I have seen a lot of protests in different places. And yeah, now that I think about it, it's hard to think of mass scale protests taking place in America at all. There were some at the beginning of this, but are there any at this point? I don't know. I haven't
well,
seen
it's,
it,
but we're I've trying seen... to help it. This is what's going to happen. There's a soccer tournament for my grandkids, so we're going to stick around for that Saturday. Saturday afternoon, evening, we're going to start the trip. Bob and I are going to go around the state. We have a cafe in northeastern Arizona that since August we've been following, and she refused to shut down or have her employees wear a mask or you guys can suck it. Well, she has the local community, you know, there supporting her, and Bob and I went there during Jackalope and, you know, talked to him, and then we interviewed him a couple of times, and we're going to go there and put on a really big show and, you know, have fun and give support for those saying no. When we come back this a week from this Friday, there's a gym owner in Scottsdale that has refused to lock down. He's like, nope, and we're not doing masks. We're not well, they've given like 15 citation worth tens of thousands of dollars, and they're going to try and grind them under their jackboot heel of the state of you're not allowed to exist. So it's who supports these guys? Well, they're setting them up for the big fall and using him as an example in the press for this is what happens to you when. Well, we're going, really? Well, let me tell you what happens when I see him. So we're going to do a big remote there and bring the love bus and have a bunch of people come and make a big deal out of it. But I've been looking for these types of people, but they're not that common, or at least not getting attention. And when we do it, hopefully a lot of people go, hey, pick me. I'm not doing it either. And I'm, you know, the wave will start.
It blows my mind that more people aren't standing up. I'm following what's going on in Canada with the Adamson's barbecue in Toronto.
Yep.
The guy who's who opened his doors against.
And they arrested him.
And got arrested. GoFundMe, apparently his GoFundMe is still up. They have $300,000 for legal fees right now, but I cannot imagine GoFundMe is going to allow that to continue anymore, because you, sir, are not allowed to collect funds for something we disapprove of course. So, it blows my mind that more people aren't doing this right now.
You know, I could do a Love Bus GoFundMe thing and go and do it and kind of probably get a lot and then them take it. You know, I'm not giving them the pleasure of taking it. Screw them. You know, you want to give me money, give me, walk up and put it in my hand. I want a sack of silver on the doorstep of the bus. Something.
The real way that this will be defeated, if it is going to be defeated, is not, okay, everyone, let's all rally around this one person who did this one thing and we'll all raise big legal fees to have this one court case. No, it's having 1,000 business owners doing this, 10,000 business owners doing this, and then try to make that enforce that on every one of them. That's how you undermine the system, not, let's make this one scapegoat our trust and let's put the trust in the court system to make sure they do the right thing.
You know, we have a common friend that's been an activist, and he, you know, get some back in the 90s and so on. And now he's like, oh, I'm ready, man. Oh, bring it. Oh, I want to make some signs. I want to do something. Where are we going to rally? Where are the troops? Let's go get some. You know, I'm going, okay, well, how you doing your mask thing? Well, when they make me, I go get it and it's in my pot and I really bitch. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't do anything. You know, take your money somewhere else. You know, stand outside, boycott, do something. I mean, you know, just be a Karen, doesn't do it. I mean, come on, man. You know,
it's funny. I was thinking about that yesterday, actually, because as people know, I'm in Japan. And as people know, people in Japan wear masks all the time anyway. So I was out yesterday walking around and looking, and of course, 90% of people are wearing masks all the time outside in whatever situation, as one would expect. But there are the 10% of people. You'll always see a few people out that don't have a mask, whatever. And it's no big deal. There are no mask mandates. There's no law, whatever. So I was thinking about it. And I think, okay, during this entire time, I've encountered 3 times when I was asked to put on a mask specifically for something that when I was just out and about. One of which was at my gym that I've been going to here. And they said, oh, yeah, we got a mask mandate now. And so I'm like, okay, but yeah, I'm not going to work out here in a mask, no. The second one was at a game center arcade kind of thing in the shopping mall. I was literally just going to get my parking validated. They're like, you can't come in here if you're not wearing a mask. Okay, bye-bye. And the third one was a restaurant that I've been to a million times, but I went in. And they're like, oh, you got to put a mask on to go to your table. I'm like, oh, okay, bye-bye. And so it's happened 3 times here in the land of masks. And every time, it's just been like, okay, well, that's your policy. Goodbye. And you don't have my business anymore. Why on earth? Yeah, it boggles my mind people would continue to patronize these places that are telling them, I'll do it grudgingly. You know, no, of course not. Why would you do that? Your power is in saying no and meaning it.
You know what we did is we created the first thing I wanted to do. Where's Donna? Donna? You know what I want you to do, I don't know if you got it on today's archive. Can you put in the love card, the Christmas card for it is? All right. Look at this. She's already got it in there. I'll show you this. What we did is that we just go around and we just, you know, I just want to share the love. We did this in 07, back in the Lovelution, the winter of, and it was this here. And it's just a Christmas card. It's like a half sheet Christmas card. And it's, you know, it's really just, you know, help spread the word. And on the back, you know, freedom's the answer, what's the question? Now, we thought about, you know, what kind of thing would we put on there to, you know, emphasize, you know, the mask wearing or, you know, something like that. And I'm going, nah, you know, we're just going to, you know, just, you know, the Christmas spirit of the love and just, you know, freedom's the answer, what's the question? And I think this is a better way, certainly now, to do something that's going to be something we can share with people and just, you know, not be confrontational, you know. And well, that's defending Archimedes' version. You don't have one of the card that we did now? I guess not. All right, well, she'll put it up. But we have actual pictures there. But it looks like this, you know. Declaration of Independence, and it has love help spread the word, and it's got the love bus on the bottom. It's a different version, but the main thing was that we just have a good vibe. When we went down to the Hyatt Regency in downtown Phoenix, they had a that Rudy Giuliani thing, and they're doing their hearing, and while they're doing it and showing all the fraud, Ducey is signing the paper while, you know, Hail to the Chief is playing on his phone, which was the president calling him while he's doing it, you know, and he did it anyway. So I don't care. I'm down there. We're passing out the love cards. And then a lot of people that we know and they recognize us, woohoo, and they take pictures of the love bus and all that. Well, you must be for Trump. Nah, I'm not for any of y'all. I don't care. I'm for the love, man. We're just doing the love. What would you recommend? I don't know anything else to do, certainly around, you know, the holiday season and Christmas and so on, to just kind of give a good vibe about whatever, and then maybe later we'll, I mean, what would you do? I mean, you're like Black Market Friday.info kind of stuff, you know, positive solutions, but there's some people, they're angry, man, they want to get some. Oh, are you for buying rifles and ammo? I mean, you know, what do you think people should be doing?
Look, I'm not going to tell people what to do or what not to do. It has to be an authentic expression of who you are, the circumstances you find yourself in, the context of the situation. I mean, there are a million variables. And sometimes I think you're exactly right. You know, the feel-good holiday vibe and love and spreading that message is exceptionally important. And to let people know that, yes, I still love you. I care about you. I'm not your enemy. That is an incredibly important message to be spreading right now. On the other hand, yeah, there are times in which you have to stand your ground and say no and mean it. And I'm not going to tell people, you know, I'm not going to give some blanket rule for it. People have to know the difference.
Oh, they also, I got a note here. They saw a train of Starlink satellites go by in the sky. Because that was one of the things we discussed today was censorship. How are you feeling about censorship? How's it going across the way? How's it affecting you? Are you kind of been insulated from, you know, the censorship a little bit? They want to leave James alone a little bit. They won't bring any attention to you. Yeah. But I'm going CorbettReport.com on everything I get on.
Well, yeah. Honestly, it does start to concern me because clearly, I have said the exact same types of things that clearly have gotten other people censored, and it is not applying to me. And I don't know why, but it does concern me that I'm going to be used as some sort of held up as some sort of example. Look at what these crazy conspiracy theorists said and blah, blah, blah. I don't know what, but what can I do? What else can I do other than to put out my message in the way that I think is best? And I take the message seriously. And
why do you think you're not big enough? Nobody hates you enough. They don't love you enough. What is it? Yeah. It's Tokyo. I mean, you know, where's your servers?
Yeah. I don't know. There's so many different factors that could go into that. And it could be some insider at Google that likes what I do and has me on some sort of special whitelist here or something. I don't know. Could be that. could be being set up for something. It could be that I'm not big enough. It could be that I'm in Japan, so I get treated differently. I don't know. There's a million variables.
It could be.
It's not like I've ever heard from anyone at YouTube.
I tell you what it could be. This is what it could be. It could be it's all backed on IPFS, and if they take you down, it's going to go stupid anyway. It's going to be a billion downloads of pandemic.
This is the
That's
thing.
What it's going to be.
Anyone who's been on the internet for more than a few months knows about the Streisand effect and knows that, censorship draws attention. So it boggles my mind that they still try to go down that road. But
I think that might be one of the I don't know. But we made sure that when it happens, it's going to go stupid. And that was one thing with Plandemic. A lot of people don't realize it. The IPFS version, that's what seeded all of that. There was whack-a-mole. They couldn't stop it. And we could see the traffic, as much as we could tell, just from going to our pages to where the IPFS link was. So those, sites, man, it went to the moon. But, I have no idea how many times they shared the IPFS link, but just the ones that they tracked is over a billion downloads. So you don't go, hell's that even? That's a quarter of the people that's on the freaking internet. I'm going, this is, go ahead and mess with some James Corbett. I'll show you what's up.
Well, hopefully. I mean, look, I've spent 13 years building this up and building up an audience that hopefully understands how important this information is, and hopefully we'll know how to get it out to other people when they start bringing down the censorship ban hammer.
Well, do you give your mantra again to everybody about downloading stuff. Let people know, and they know your hashes, and they know that your IP address without the name. They know. Go ahead and tell people that. That's important.
Yeah. Okay. So if people are interested about IPFS, the first thing you'll do is go to go to Freedom's Phoenix, of course. If you go to CorbettReport.com. On the sidebar, you will see Corbett Report on IPFS. Click that square. It will take you to the static front page of Corbett Report on IPFS. And from there, you will be able to visit the IPFS version of the site and click around and see that it looks and functions mostly like my site. Obviously, you won't be able to log into the website from IPFS and things like that. But you can access all of the pages, and all of the MP3 and MP4 files will be there. Once you do that, click around. Use it if you want. Use that. It will probably not be as user-friendly as the World Wide Web version, but at any rate, you can use it.
And okay, let's test it right here. I'm gonna punch it. IPFS on Corbett page. Click.
Done.
Boom. Oh, there it is.
There we go.
Now we go to on Freedom's Phoenix. We have it in the archive. We're gonna click on it. Click. Boom. This is fast. It's faster than World Wide Web in a lot of ways. And I'm going, and there it is.
It's a couple weeks old, but still, it's there.
This is one we manually do it to make sure it's all kind of there's script that needs to be done still and so on. But we're on it to make sure that it's, that it's up there. But, it's
once you do
fast.
That, please, at the very least, just bookmark that link. And then you will always have it. And whenever they do whatever to my site, you will have the IPFS version forever and always. Also, yes, download anything that is important, MP3, MP4, articles, whatever, anything that you find that is important, download it to your hard drive. Keep a copy of it because it will get disappeared. And here's a little task for anyone listening to this. I will give you brownie points. You'll get 100 Corbett feel good happy points. If you do this, I'm sure it's still on YouTube, but it is disappearing, the various postings I've seen. Find George Hunt's presentation of the 1987 Fourth World Wilderness Conference that was held in Colorado back in 1987. He did a presentation on this. He did an interview about it. There's a couple of things up there. I've noticed they're starting to disappear. And I just think of this because I was just recording Neural Next Week where we were talking about this. So I was trying to look for it and finding a bunch of broken links. Find that. And when you find it, download it to your hard drive. There's lots of different ways to download YouTube videos. I suggest people start teaching themselves how to do that. Download it to your hard drive. Upload it to BitChute, Mines, Library, whatever, somewhere else that has censorship resistance. And you will get some feel good happy points for me.
Okay, give me the name.
Helping to have preserved something from the Library of Alexandria. And more important than that particular video, although it is an important video, but more important is just the understanding of how to do that and the and getting into the habit of doing it. When you
okay, give me his name, the link, so I can go find it. What is it?
This is a question. I don't unsaid. UNCED. George Hunt. Just see what comes up.
Earth Summit 92 YouTube, yeah, by
exactly. So people should start preserving things like this that are important, that are starting to disappear.
Okay, well, we got it up there. You know, James Corbett said, boom, so it shall be said by James, so shall it be done, be written in forever. Boom, boom, boom. What's special about this?
So as we were talking about today on New World Next Week, which will be going up in 12 hours or so, the Financial Times just came out with a report. Shock, awe, who would have guessed it? The Global Environmental Facility, this multi-billion dollar bank that coordinates a bunch of climate protection actions around the world, and it's for nature, guys. Turns out, massive corruption. Millions upon millions of dollars getting pilfered out into the pockets of people associated with this bank and the corrupt politicians in various countries. Now, of course, the Financial Times, being the Financial Times, says we got these documents from an internal investigation that shows all of this corruption. They don't publish the documents, of course. They don't even quote from the documents. They just say there was a lot of corruption. And of course, the only example they give is Russia. There was some project in Russia and millions of dollars got pilfered out. Of course, whatever. Anyway, but I make the point of saying, well, what is this Global Environmental Facility? What is the GEF? No one's ever heard of it. Oh, unless you follow the Corbett Report. I did an article 4 years ago called The Second Most Important Bank You've Never Heard Of, which will be up on IPFS since you've preserved my site, that goes in detail about what is the Global Environmental Facility, where it came from. And this presentation by George Hunt is from what was the 1987 UN UNCED conference. It was preparatory to the Rio Earth Summit, where you had Edmund de Rothschild, you had Morris Strong, you had, I believe, David Rockefeller, at any rate, some very important interests converging in Colorado for this wildlife conference. George Hunt was not supposed to be part of this conference, but there was somebody who was supposed to be like a secretary for the conference kind of thing or something. He got sick. And so they put out an advertisement, you know, will anybody come and just do some secretarial services for us? George Hunt volunteered, thinking, you know, it's for nature, this will be great. And when he got there and he saw what was going on and what they were talking about, he was like, what is happening? He recorded audio of parts of the conference, including Edmund de Rothschild's talking about what was going on. Just incredible stuff. And this is his presentation of that he was giving in 1992, warning people, like, look, this is what's really going on. They're creating these billion-dollar facilities that are total boondoggle, and it's about control. I'm telling you, this is not what we want. That kind of information, I'm surprised they're even memory-holing it. I have seen a lot of broken links for this right now because, unfortunately, not a lot of people know about this, and not a lot of people care. That was 30 years ago, and what does that matter? No, it matters. This is Agenda 21, and all this stuff that we're dealing with now is that you see the seeds of it in stuff like this. And that's why we need to preserve this for the future.
Awesome. Awesome. That's going up. I just sent it to staff. It'll go up because James Corbett said, you know, I always put on, cool, you know, things that I don't do it often. It's maybe once a month or something like that. I'll put up publisher recommended. You know, can I put James Corbett recommended?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll put James Corbett recommended. Boom. Everybody watch that. You know, one, it was, I think it was Sunday. Bob and I, we were here, and I asked him, you know, it was a bleak weekend of news, man. It was, I'm like, damn. I try and seed the site with, you know, some tech and, you know, some, you know, dog saves grandma or something. I mean, you know, just to take the pressure off. And I go, here are the top four stories. You know, this death, dying, and destruction, this death, dying, and destruction, this meteor imminent, and this asteroid going to kill. I mean, which one of these do I put up top? And we're like, wow, let's look on the other side. Man, it was all dark news. And I go, I know what I'll put up. In, I think it was like 13 or something, a long time ago, there was 16, I mean, it was years ago, there was a fantastic, beautiful pole dance. It was a woman in a world competition of doing pole dancing. It was the freaking coolest thing I ever saw. And I go, you know, where is that thing? I went and found it, put it top of the page, and I'm like, man, just cause, you know, publisher recommended, chill the F out, because damn, you know, it was awesome. You know, I'll send it to Donna. Yeah. Send James that pole dance link. You know, no, seriously, you're going to watch it. You're going to email me back. You go,
I'll tell my wife it's for work, honey.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. It's more a sport thing. I mean, it's not. Yeah, no, it's not pornographic.
Gotcha.
No, she has her clothes on. I mean, you know, it's like a, you know, a fitness thing. You know, it's a competition for yoga or some crap like that. But it was so good that I didn't expect it. But the Telegram channel guy started sporting and talking about it. Woo, look at that. I'm going, good. That's exactly the point I was trying to create, because it's
awesome.
So bleak.
Yeah.
Holy crap. And even the tech is, you know what? You know, Trump, the U.S. government should buy Elon Musk Starship so they can bomb people and bring in the Marines within an hour. Woohoo! I'm going, oh, yeah. Let's take that dream and, you know, bitch it up, you know?
You know what? You've just sparked an idea in me. I should write an editorial at some point about just for fun. For people who don't know, my subscriber newsletter every week, I do the editorial, and then I have some recommended reading and viewing. And I also always include a just for fun link, just one thing at the bottom of the newsletter.
Yeah, that category. Yeah.
Whatever. It's just interesting. It's just fun. It's just something to make you laugh or whatever. And that's always been important for me, to have that in there, just to maintain our sanity and maintain grounding in the world outside of all this craziness and nonsense and the horrible stuff. People always ask me, how do you maintain, you know, your sanity? Well, it because there's a real world out there that I enjoy, and there's different things and we can look at. It's not a throwaway thing. It is important to highlight that sometimes. And actually, I had that experience just a week or so ago, randomly on YouTube. Yeah, all right. Anyway, it was YouTube. But I did run across this video of this guy that he was sight reading the Super Mario World music. He, according to the video, I mean, who knows? But according to the video, it was the first time he'd ever seen this. And he was just sight reading it and playing along and improvising on it. And it was 4 minutes or whatever. And I expected I'd watch, you know, a minute of it and then click off. But I actually ended up watching the whole thing, because it was just, it was life affirming. It was like, yes, this is why I love humanity. Because people are out there with their passions and their talents doing these incredible, remarkable, creative things and bringing life and vitality and joy to the world. And that's what it's about. And we have to remind ourselves about that sometimes. It's not a trivial thing.
It's not. And I'm glad you made that point, because it's what gives us our power. You know, it's humanity. You know, humanity is what I think the bad guys are afraid of. I think our humanity is what they fear. I think our ability to create, one of my friends and supporters, he goes, you know, the reason the bad guys need to, you know, beat us into submission or get us on side or make us fearful and get us thinking about, because they lack the ability to. The sociopathic brain can't. They can't manifest reality and what they need us to do it for them. You know, so I'm going, yeah. Wow, that's a powerful statement. What if we refuse to
Such
be their engine
point.
Of reality?
Yeah. I keep coming back to this. Yes, I've told this story a few times now, but I'll tell it again. When I was teaching here in Japan and at a kindergarten, and I saw one of the they were doing this activity coloring these flags that they were making for a little race that was going on in the town. And I saw one girl, you know, being very careful and drawing this beautiful pattern. And the girl beside her was just kind of scribbling and doing whatever. And when the girl who was scribbling looked over at the beautiful pattern that the girl beside her was doing, she grabbed her crayon and just went and just scribbled all over that other girl's beautiful flag, because she was embarrassed, I guess. You know, she had been just scribbling and hers didn't look very pretty. That one looked very pretty.
How
old
were
they?
So she
wanted to mess it up. And to me, that is the mentality of the would-be elite, the psychopaths at the top who want to control humanity. They can't. They are not creative. They do not see the beauty in life and creation. They are the ones that want to desecrate and make the world disgusting, and they want to destroy anything that's beautiful. We need to preserve our humanity. What makes us humanity and makes us worth preserving and going forward is our ability to create and create beauty in this world. And don't take that lightly. Don't take that for granted.
I'm going to show today's archive, you know, for this show, has that link, and I'm just going to let it, you know, play. I'll just go like in the middle of it to encourage you to, you know, go watch the whole thing. Yeah, it's in there somewhere. Oh, there it is. Okay, so here it is. She starts off. It's only a few minutes, you know, but so it's a, you know, it's a pole dance thing, whatever, you know. But it has been so impactful when I get the worst. This is years since I've seen this or put it up or even thought about it. Years. But it was such a bleak news day that I'm just going, and it shows she starts off, she's just playing hopscotch or whatever. But anyway, I'll just go into, you know, the just a piece of it so you can see what I'm talking about. All right, here we go. She gets on it, and then, yeah, we're going to rock and roll. Now, this has been just something that I, every time, it's been like four times over the past years that we put this up, that people have went, what the heck was that? You know, so I'm going, okay. You know, this has been just, you look at humanity in the Olympics and you see the kids doing these floor exercises, or you see, you know, that's why things like Chariots of Fire and the overcoming physical adversity, or 28 days, you know, stuck in a rock or something like that. And I'm just, this has been what makes you go to the human, or you show humanity to an alien race and you say, look at this, what humans can do. I want you to know that we have enormous capabilities, and it's just amazing. And there's a lot, you know, better stuff here. I'll just let it run because, you know, it's fun. But the main thing that I wanted to make sure, you know, people understand is our world is not just these sociopaths running everything. It's, you know, just having fun. It's us. We miss a great deal going to the soccer games of our grandkids. You know, I'm just, the little things like that. And I'm looking at an opportunity to try and instill that feeling during the holiday season. That's why we did the love cards. And I remember the impact it had back in 07. And we did that again. And we didn't do that many. We only did like 5,000. It'll, you know, last, you know, a while for us to put it out. But I'm looking for something else. You and I talk about this kind of stuff that we've done before. You know, you and I, we've come up with a lot of things like the, you know, Black Market Friday deal, you know, and so on. So,
sorry, I'm watching this video. That is incredible. I hope people can understand the incredible athleticism that is involved there. That is not, wow, that's crazy.
No, here's a good one. This one, this move is, are you freaking kidding me? And, oh my God.
Oh my God.
I mean, there's a bunch of that stuff in here. You know, so I wanted to share that because, you know, is that not life affirming? I mean, you see something like a billion, you're going, holy crap. I mean, sometimes every time I watch it, I'm watching it like two or three times. I'm like, let's watch that again, man. So, and you can, I'm, think of it. What's the next thing we can do? What's something we can change the world, James? We're world changers. We're still going to keep working on this barter thing. You know, we can make Black Market Friday every Friday for all I care, you know, and stop buying from the big buck. Quit, you know, rewarding these guys with their lockdowns and so on. Screw them. Because when I go online, I'm looking for something, you know, if I have to buy it from Amazon and I need it, all right, I'm going to need it because I'm fighting for freedom with it, whatever. You know, I can justify some mental gymnastics. But I go to the manufacturer first. I am doing a lot more of my purchasing off of Amazon for that very reason. So, you know, a little thing like that. What's some of the other things we could do?
Well, let's think about this. And let's think about what makes... Okay, so, yes, life-affirming, amazing, incredible acts by people, you know, just highlighting what humanity can do is important, and important to keep that in mind as one of the reasons why we love humanity and we want humanity to flourish, unlike the psychopaths who want humanity to be controlled like cattle on the tax plantation. So we have to demonstrate that. And you know what? That pole dancer, the guy playing piano, that's something that anyone can watch and enjoy. And you will reach millions of people with that life-affirming message. And hey, if you can get them to stick around to hear about, well, oh, and by the way, this is what's going on, and these are the people who are trying to control and suppress humanity, that's a good way to get people interested in the truth. And I don't know, I don't have the answer of exactly how to do that, but it was a point that Derek Rose made in my Goodbye YouTube party recently that I will say I've made that point before as well, but a lot of people picked up on Derek saying it. We don't just need these alternative platforms, the libraries and minds and whatever, to just be, you know, all truth content, all screaming in your face about the psychopaths coming to kill you. No, we need the cat videos and the makeup tutorials and the, you know, the car mechanic instruction tutorials videos and all of that stuff that is all the rest of it, so that we can have that commingling with important information, because yes, people are living their lives and they have many different interests, and we want to make sure that we're addressing there's a lot of stuff
out you there. Sparked an idea. I got an idea. All right, it's an Ernie idea. That's always a good idea, because Ernie ideas, this is sparked by James. All right, what if we did on our alternative sites, we have, you know, Float and Minds and Steam and you know, BitChute and whatever the heck, that alternatives to GooTube and so on, that we emphasize our favorite cat videos or our favorite animal or our favorite life affirming, just made us feel good to show people this is over here too. You know, this is the one, and emphasize of, you know, just fun. You know, the best skateboarding dog. I mean, you know, I don't care.
Right.
Yeah, let's do, you know, let's think about that. We'll talk about that next week. Or
yeah, we should have some sort of contest. Who can find the best video like that on an alternative platform?
Yeah, on anything but YouTube. Screw YouTube. You know, the best video.
Exactly. Hell, they could take, not Facebook, not Twitter.
Yeah, they take it from YouTube and put it on BitChute. I don't give a crap. You know, this is, you know, yeah. And then have the original not on YouTube category. You know, we have two. The winner of not on YouTube and got from YouTube, or it was on, you know, one of these alternatives first, and just have
let's figure out the details and let's make it happen, and make it happen during the hopefully Christmas, New Year holiday when people are looking for something not depressing.
I'm in. That's a good thing to end on, James, because I'm just about solutions. You know, this has been it's a battle of emotion. It always comes down to how about the feels, and that's what Facebook and all these guys, they're always about the feels, but what they try and make you feel good about is not good for you. You know, if we can have life affirming and freedom oriented leave me aloneism of something feeling good about, you know, even standing up for the man creatively, you know, standing up against the man, you know, that's why 4409 for Easter one time he put on a bunny suit. You remember that one? And then on the cameras, he took a big egg
over the surveillance cameras.
Yeah, he put it over there. It was awesome. It was awesome. And he never admitted it was him. Hell, I still don't know if it was him. You know?
We don't know who it was. Easter Bunny.
Now, James, I always feel better talking to you, or make sure I do. And there's a lot of good things. And I told you, anytime I'm on somebody else's show, it's CorbettReport.com. Especially progressives. Especially mainstream media. All right. Awesome. Peace, brother.
Thank you.
See you next week.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye.